This is the History of the United States podcast, episode 32. This morning, the Marquis Montcalm, being desirous of our being eyewitnesses of how well he was able to perform his part of the capitulation, the Indian doctors began with their tomahawks to cure the sick and wounded. They began to seize on all the Negroes and Indians, whom they unmercifully dragged over the breastworks and scalped. From a journal kept at Fort William Henry, 1757. Hello, and welcome back to the History of the United States podcast. This episode, we continue our journey through the French and Indian War, or the Seven Years' War, if you're of a more European persuasion. Things were not going well for Great Britain. They saw setbacks in North America, and while not doing much of the fighting with British troops on the continent, the allies that the British were subsidizing weren't doing very well either. The man rising to power at this time, William Pitt, was still committed to the majority of the war effort going to the colonies. He had no less of a goal than to reduce the French as a colonial power once and for all. This was welcome news to Lord Loudoun, commander-in-chief of the North American colonies. Unfortunately for Loudoun, anyway, this also meant a greater voice in the military planning by Pitt as well. Loudoun had designs on attacking Quebec, but Pitt had other ideas, and called for an offensive on Louisbourg instead. Loudoun did not like the interference from London, but even he had to bow to the power that Pitt was building. If Loudoun wasn't a fan of interference from his superiors, you can probably guess how he felt about getting resistance from the colonials. Since arriving in the colonies, Loudoun was trying to impose his will on the colonies with little excess. Success, not excess. He tried to create a more reliable and much less corrupt system of supplying his army. Quite frankly, Loudoun did not trust the Americans. The animosity was mutual. Loudoun made further changes to the military structure of the colonies, again with an eye to bringing this under greater control. No longer were the colonies providing their own militias, in effect, their own armies, but instead as 100-man companies integrated into the greater command of the British Army proper. While still separate, the Americans were now much more under the command of British officers, and subject to an even greater extent British discipline. Furthermore, Loudoun made it much more difficult for troops to leave after their enlistment was up. All of these troops still needed better housing, and Loudoun wanted Pitt and Parliament to pass a law allowing the army to commandeer private homes for the quartering of troops. As you can imagine, this was not a popular idea. Politically, for Pitt and Parliament, and especially among the colonials. However, perhaps the greatest bugbear in Loudoun's mind, and what he would take the most drastic measures to counteract, was the smuggling and trading with the enemy. His solution? A complete embargo on all colonial ports. Nothing but official vessels may come and go into any American port. As you might guess, this was a serious hurt on all the port cities. The colonial governors eventually started to bucket this mandate, and more trade begins to find its way through. Loudoun, as you might guess as well, sees this as gross insubordination, bordering on treason. Ironically, it was this policy, and others like it, that began to unite the colonies more than anything proposed by the Albany Congress. All these measures, ultimately, were for the war effort and the attack on Fort Louisbourg, which guarded the approach to the St. Lawrence River. On June 27th, 1757, Loudoun embarked with 100 ships carrying 6,000 men. The invasion force arrived at Halifax in 3 days, and waited for the much-needed British Navy for the eventual assault. The Navy arrived on July 9th, and finally Loudoun was ready to proceed. However, Montcalm, the commander of the French forces in North America, wasn't going to just sit back and wait for the British. After his success at Oswego, Montcalm wanted to keep the pressure on the British. His success also acted as the greatest recruitment tool among Native Americans. A chance to join the French allies, and gain trophies and honor along with British scalps, was quite the attractive offer. Over 2,000 Native Americans made their way to Montcalm's command, joining over 6,000 regulars. Some of the Native Americans came as far away from Michigan and the Illinois regions. With a command of 8,000 souls, Montcalm wasn't going to sit back. He had control of the western interior of the continent. He was now determined to strike closer to the British home colonies. He planned on moving south to Lake George and destroying the British fort that rested on the southern shore, Fort William Henry. Earlier in the year, French forces saw the vulnerability and value of the fort, and by August, Montcalm was ready to attack. He met with almost no resistance. Under a flag of truce, he informed the commander that he intended to bombard the fort without mercy. If the British commander wanted to avoid bloodshed, this was his chance. He refused. The French bombardment of Fort William Henry lasted 6 days. Unlike the Oswego siege and capitulation, Montcalm was much more magnanimous than he had been at the Great Lakes outpost. The British would be allowed to keep all personal weapons, and the entire command would be allowed to leave and return to Fort Edward, provided that they honor the terms and not raise arms against the French for 18 months. As we've seen in other battles, Native Americans did not really see the utility of such terms. The various tribes, as mentioned, some coming from very far away, wanted trophies and loot, their ideas of honors of war. The French allies rushed into the fort and scalped many of the wounded and taking whatever property they could. Eventually, the French came in and tried to restore order. The next day, as the march of prisoners began their trek to Fort Edward, many Native Americans descended on the retreating column. They demanded their clothes, their weapons, and just about anything else that had value. As you can imagine, a force of Native Americans surrounding the retreating force, especially in light of the events of the day before, created a bit of a panic. That is exactly what happened. By the time Montcalm personally came in to restore order, 165 people were killed, and somewhere between 300 and 500 were taken prisoner. This episode, later called the Massacre of Fort William Henry, had a number of important consequences. First, it completely soured Montcalm on the use of Native Americans. While he still saw the necessity of Native allies, he did his best to keep them at arm's length. Not only did he feel that such actions confirmed his worst beliefs about Native Americans, but he felt that it reflected poorly on his reputation, something of very great importance in European military circles. It also soured the Native Americans on fighting for France. The restrictions and European rules of warfare were unattractive to Native Americans. They were looking for honor, glory, trophies, bounty. The idea of letting a force go with all of its goods in their possession was just anathema to Native Americans. Never again would Native Americans come from such a vast area to aid the French. Unfortunately for the Native Americans, many of the scalps and the other items taken in the battle were infested with smallpox. The returning warriors brought a massive epidemic to their people that would devastate many nations from the Great Lakes all the way to the Illinois country, far to the west. As far as the British were concerned, anti-Catholic and anti-Native American sentiment grew because of the massacre. It also, as Montcalm feared, made the British far less inclined to treat a losing force with any mercy. Finally, making Montcalm's life even more difficult because of the proximity and hysteria generated, enlistment in the New England colonies increased greatly for the next campaign season in 1758. And that's not all. After the battle and the massacre, the Native Americans left the French force. And because of the time of year, many of the Canadian provincials needed to leave as well. As much as Montcalm would have loved to press the attack all the way to Fort Edward, his command was too far reduced to attempt any such action. He decided to destroy Fort William Henry and leave the British without a presence on Lake George. All of this took place at the beginning of August. Loudon, meanwhile, was left with a stalled attack at Louisbourg. After the Navy arrived, Loudon wanted an honest assessment if the Navy would be able to help and dislodge the French. Unfortunately for Loudon and the British, it was decided that such an action would be foolhardy. In the rest of the colonies, things did not improve or change very much. George Washington was becoming even more frustrated with the House of Burgesses that he asked Lord Loudon, to fold the Virginia regiment into the regular army. Loudon denied this request, but did give Washington complete command over the Virginia regiment. But it wasn't without strings. Though it seemed like more authority, Loudon also appointed a new commander based in southern Pennsylvania, who was ahead of Washington in the chain of command. Washington's first order from his new commander? Supply my command. The peace negotiations I mentioned last podcast, or maybe a couple of podcasts ago, between the Pennsylvanians and eastern Delawares, though, was bearing some fruit. There was an agreement to look into the legality of the walking purchase of 1737. Also, after the war, if the eastern Delawares were to fight with the British, they would be granted a sizable part of land in Pennsylvania, which was called the Wyoming Valley. And probably of most interest to the British, anyway, was that the negotiations presented an opening to further negotiations with the western Delawares, who are currently allied with France. However, perhaps the biggest event of the war, at least on the British side, was taking place in London. Pitt decided to relieve Loudon of command. Pitt was looking to treat the colonies more like allies than subordinates, something that just wasn't in Loudon's worldview. A more compliant and willing colonial population was needed to change the fortunes of war. Just as the British were subsidizing the German kingdoms, Pitt was now looking to treat the colonies in much the same way. The colonial officers would be granted much more authority. The new commander would not. Instead of having absolute power over all things in the colonies, the next commander would not enjoy such a privilege. Who is that next commander? Well, that will have to wait until the next podcast. A little side note, an additional link will be on the webpage for a while with the show for a show that I did on WGN Radio here in Chicago called The Saturday Special with Amy Guth. I jumped ahead a few centuries to talk about another historic passion of mine, rock and roll music, especially the history of rock festivals. When it's up, please give it a listen. I had a blast doing it, and it was a lot of fun. Until next time, though, take care. You've been listening to the History of the United States.